This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
We are reading, allowing someone else's words to be in the part of our mind that listens, where we are vulnerable, private and gentle. And here we are with company, a voice other than our own. And here, in a good way, a musical and entertaining way, we know something is wrong. As we read, we're not quite sure of the specifics, but we have been able to learn what we need to unnerve us. We are human beings. We have, more or less, paid attention to our world, to what is natural and unnatural in it. We have noticed that softness and innocence can seem to invite types of destruction. We are aware of the frailties of our species, have on occasion been hurt, and we have learned to watch for threats. This is why, deep in the safety of our thinking and a fictional world, we can tell something is wrong. We have already understood that our hero, Nicholas Nickleby, is unwatchful. He is an adult with a child's soft heart, an innocent. Worse, his delicate sister and his muddle-witted mother are burdensomely vulnerable and have only his protection when we might feel he can't even really defend himself. His father made bad investments, lost money, their money, and then died. The family has been doubly abandoned and thrown into the care of their thoroughly unsupportive Uncle Ralph, a man who is able and cunning with money but taxing and chilly with his relatives. Despite his undoubted authority, Ralph is treated with a telling variety of contempt by his clerk, Newman Noggs. This suggests they have a history and that it's shady. Something is wrong. Now Nicholas is being sent to the wilds of Yorkshire, which do seem increasingly wild as we approach them with him. He is going unreachably far away from both mother and sister. He is to be a teacher at Dotheboys Hall. Dotheboys does not sound a happy word. Nicholas worries that he'll make an incompetent schoolmaster leave Ralph unconcerned, which is concerning. Mr. Squeers, the master of Dotheboys, Squeers again seems an unpleasant name, and Wackford Squeers is more unpleasant still. Mr. Squeers also doesn't care about Nicholas's absent qualifications. He doesn't care about the new boys he is carting north. It seems unlikely that even their basic needs will be met. Nicholas's world of honesty and effort, hope and logic has rattled and shredded to nothing on the back of an unkind coach, and he is in Ralph's world now, Squeers' world. We can see this, but Nicholas cannot. We can see that Squeers is ugly both outside and in, a sort of joke, and yet a fatal sort of joke because he has power. This shouldn't be so, but it is. Something is wrong. When Nicholas left London, we were there, with the bustle, the horses, the nervous children, their bags and belongings that might be appropriated later, and Newman Noggs came, slightly inexplicably, to wish Nicholas farewell and give him a letter. And Nicholas, although we might view this as unwise, simply pocketed the letter and forgot it. He only happens upon it again at the end of his day's journey, Dotheboys waiting ahead of him, ready to be gleefully and violently stupid. We can feel it dimly, setting itself like a trap for those who can't deserve it. Because who could? And we have the awful and delicious sensation of being better informed than a hero, of worrying for him. This is where Dickens tells us that Nicholas was preparing for bed with something like renewed cheerfulness when a sealed letter fell from his coat pocket. It was directed to himself, was written upon very dirty paper, and in such cramped and crippled writing as to be almost illegible. After great difficulty and much puzzling, he contrived to read as follows.
My dear young man, I know the world. Your father did not, or he would not have done me a kindness when there was no hope of return. You do not, or you would not be bound on such a journey. If ever you want a shelter in London, don't be angry at this. I once thought I never should. They know where I live. At the Sign of the Crown in Silver Street, Golden Square. It is at the corner of Silver Street and James Street, with a bar door both ways. You can come at night. Once nobody was ashamed. Never mind that. It's all over. Excuse errors. I should forget how to wear a whole coat now. I have forgotten all my old ways. My spelling may have gone with them. Newman Noggs. P.S. If you should go near Barnard Castle, there is good ale at the King's Head. Say you know me, and I'm sure they will not charge you for it. You may say Mr. Noggs there, for I was a gentleman then. I was indeed.
Dickens continues, "It may be a very undignified circumstance to record, but after he had folded this letter and placed it in his pocketbook, Nicholas Nickleby's eyes were dimmed with a moisture that might have been taken for tears. I know the world. There's such an elegant and simple weight of tragedy in that. Noggs, the alcoholic, the fallen gentleman, but still he can't be drunk or lost enough to ignore the self-interested savagery that surrounds him. This is the world, but it shouldn't be. Even a defeatist knows that something is wrong. This is the world, and yet it's a dark in which a good deed shines and is remembered. The letter confesses. It tastes of sad and shameful truths, but is, of course, built of lies, of writerly manoeuvres. Dickens ensures that Noggs, broken man, can catch his own voice perfectly on paper. In a way, Noggs isn't writing. He's speaking. Noggs adds just enough to our knowledge of the plot and delicately settles the idea that the past can return, that people remember. He begins to establish a bond between injured parties, the silenced and hurt, who will gain a voice and a defender in Nicholas. We are also reassured that Noggs is properly Nicholas's friend, and therefore ours. He will stand in our place. He will help. And when he mentions Nicholas's father, Noggs is speaking of a man who was kind through innocence, who knew no better. Nicholas will be different. Nicholas is the hero of a long, long book. Nicholas had to carry his original readers through almost 2 years of monthly magazine episodes, and Nicholas was written by Charles Dickens, so Nicholas must suffer. He finally will see the truth of the world because of pain. And then when he is kind, and he will naturally be kind, he will do so as a man of experience. He will do so because he chooses to be an inhabitant of a signally better world. For now, Nicholas weeps at the thought of another's pain. Dickens, often criticised for sentimentality, won't let Noggs' letter stand by itself and do its lovely work without leaning in to be sure we get the point. No, really get the point. But what else can he do? If the letter works for us, and it should, then we will be moved. Nicholas has to join us. We have to know that we're standing together in a quiet room and have both found a wounded stranger suddenly made real in the part of our mind that listens, where we are vulnerable, private, and gentle. Dickens wants us to feel and to remember having felt, because he knows something is wrong. Allegedly, Charles Dickens' last words were, "Be natural, my children, for the writer who is natural has fulfilled all the rules of art." The final flourishes of the great may well be edited, even invented, by well-meaning friends or journalists in search of neat conclusions. It seems a little grandiose if he was indeed addressing all the writers of the world as his children. But equally, it wouldn't have been out of character for Dickens the philanthropist, Dickens the champion of new writers and women writers, Dickens the provider of humane mass entertainment, Dickens the performer, Dickens the reader and writer to the soles of his shoes to end his life with a summation of writerly good practice and fulfilled art. Be natural, my children. For Dickens, part of being natural and of being a fulfilled writer involved living as if he were an inhabitant of a signally better world. It also involved changing this one, because he knew the world. It hurt him. The shattered family, the stolen childhood, months at work in the blacking factory with no hope of return, the regimented futility and sadism of the Wellington House Academy, not at all the worst start a Victorian child could have, but not kind. And then the scramble to make his way as a journalist, an editor, a writer. Dickens' life was nothing if not Dickensian. But he didn't decide that as the world was savage, he must be more savage still. He knew the difference between misery and comfort, life and death, could be thin as paper. Accident, unwise investment, ill health, blind chance, and down you go. He wasn't a saint. He had limited time and resources. A wife, 10 children, a mistress, all those novels, all those installments, all that touring. It would keep you busy. It would work you to death. But still, word by word, act by act, his life was partly devoted to social change. In these ungenerous days, we might call it a manifestation of celebrity guilt. His visits to prisons, hospitals, schools, workhouses, his home for fallen women, his words helping to clear Jacob's Island to close the Fleet Prison, his conscience loud and then louder, because something is wrong. Although we can be generous and tender to those we know, distant need, the misery of strangers, it's hard to imagine. Somehow it doesn't insist that we help. Next year, I'm told 100,000 more children will live below the poverty line in my country, in Dickens' country. That will make 400,000 children whose lives are blighted from the start. Hard to imagine. Otherwise, we would surely help. We're not heartless, after all. But one child, lost in Dotheboys, frightened and alone. He can be a stranger who insists. Even Noggs, a drunk. When isn't that a moral failing? Isn't it self-inflicted? Isn't he undeserving? Dickens makes us understand him and care. Dickens intends us to feel and remember feeling, and from one world to another, he hopes we will learn that we can help. It's an innocent, maybe old-fashioned hope. I share it, perhaps because my childhood stopped abruptly, or because I have been powerless with no hope of return, because the mercy of strangers has saved me and may again, because I learned how to be a writer while leading workshops in prisons, hospitals, schools, daycare centres, working with forgotten people. But in reading and in writing, we found and declared ourselves, and now and then, in small ways, the world changed. I felt, and I remember feeling, angry, despairing, impatient, delighted, powerful. I think this is natural. I think that when something is wrong in the world, it is natural to say so and begin to change it. I think that above all, Dickens was an exemplary and natural writer.